Hello, 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 and happy Thursday afternoon to everybody who's joining us out there on this live stream podcast, Tech Beat. We're so happy to have you with us here this afternoon. My name is Earl Foote. I am founder, CEO of Nexus IT. Excuse me, I've got a frog in my throat. I apologize about that. Nexus IT is a white glove outsourced IT support and services firm and cybersecurity firm based here in Northern Utah and servicing a nationwide footprint. I appreciate your support here on Tech Beat and super excited about this session that we're going to be doing today, where I'm going to be talking to my distinguished guest about diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace and in the community here in Utah and beyond. But before we do that, just want to make a couple of quick announcements. First of all, we will have Q&A session kind of throughout the hour here and towards the end of the hour. So feel free to post any questions or comments you might have on whatever platform you're joining us from. We'll do our best to keep an eye on those and get to them as it makes sense throughout the hour. I did want to make sure everybody knows that TechBeat is now broadcast or syndicated across all major podcast platforms. So wherever you like to listen to your podcast, go subscribe out there. You can listen on the fly in your car or at the gym or whatever works for you. We're on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Google, Apple, and all the other platforms that are out there. quickly, I did want to mention some of our upcoming guests for April and beyond. On April 12th at 12 p.m., I've got Scott Paul, crypto expert extraordinaire, investor, advisor, startup advisor, Utah startup ecosystem champion. He'll be joining me again, April 12th at 12 p.m. And April 28th at 10:30, Garrett Openshaw, the co-founder of Munify, will be joining me. And then in months following, we have Giselle Namati, founder of ILO, Bassam Salem, founder of Atlas RTX, founder and CEO, Johnny Hanna, co-founder, CEO of Homey, Tim Cooley, author and executive director at Park City Angels, James Jensen, founder, CEO of Jump and the creator of The Void, Garrett Clark and John Bowers from Silicon Slopes will be joining me, Tara Spalding, managing director of Boom Startup, and other fantastic distinguished guests in the coming months. Also, a quick personal sort of item. My band is playing tomorrow night at Oh Shucks, just off of the Jeremy Ranch exit as you heading into Park City. I think we go live between about 7 and 7:30. It is open to the public. It's a family-friendly venue. Feel free to bring out a date or the family, have some dinner, we'll be rocking out to some of your favorite 70s, 80s, and 90s tunes for several hours. So come meet some really cool, you know, local business professionals and hang out in a little bit different environment. So again, thank you all for being here today. Let's get to my guest of the hour. First of all, I'm going to bring up Ms. Nikki Walker with us. Nikki Walker is Director of Community Engagement, DE&I, and works with a team of professionals to elevate and amplify Domo by creating and driving PR programs and initiatives focused on diversity and inclusion, workplace equity and belonging, community engagement, and Domo for good. In her role as DE&I director, Walker leads Domo's newly formed DEI Leadership Council, which represents multiple voices from around the organization to bring a more contextual application of DEI best practices and outcomes across the entire business. In addition to helping advance a culture of belonging, Walker also focuses on creating employment pipelines and supporting student leadership programs that help build and nurture a more diverse pool of qualified talent for the tech industry. So, Nikki, thank you for joining us. So happy to have you here with us. Absolutely. All right, let's go to Mindy Young, my esteemed friend and guest here, Mindy Young, which, by the way, if you don't know Mindy, she is literally the most bubbly person on the planet, and she's so fun and so kind. But professionally, Mindy has extensive experience in film, in theater, in education, and advocacy, holding both a Master of Fine Arts and Bachelor of Fine Arts from the University of Utah. Mindy uses her creative touch to inspire program development, connect organizations, and maximize collaboration. Mindy has spent years engaging young people and adults in public speaking, performing, curriculum planning, arts integration, and performance at Southern Utah University and Utah Valley University, along with other schools, businesses, and nonprofit organizations. As a Gallup certified strengths coach, Mindy is delighted to be utilizing her creative, educational, and administrative skills in several capacities at Equality Utah, including developing their Business Equality Leader Program, featuring branded diversity and inclusion training. So welcome, Mindy. So glad to have you here.
Yay, so glad to be here. I don't know how to turn off my dinging, so I'll try not to let that too much.
Hey, well, you know, it's all just, you know, authentic, right? Authenticity is good. All right, let's go to our esteemed guest, Troy Williams. For the past two decades, Troy has been a community organizer for LGBTQ Utahns. In 2004, Troy became Community Affairs Director at 90.9 FM KRCL. He was the executive producer and co-host of the talk show Radioactive. In 2010, the Salt Lake Tribune dubbed Troy the gay mayor of Salt Lake City. Troy became the executive director of Equality Utah in the fall of 2014. In 2015, he helped pass Utah's historic LGBTQ non-discrimination protections in housing and employment. In 2016, he led efforts to rename 20 blocks of downtown Salt Lake as Harvey Milk Boulevard. In 2017, Troy worked to successfully overturn the state's No Promo Homo law, which prohibited discussion of LGBTQ issues in the classroom. And in 2020, Troy led the campaign to successfully protect minors from the dangerous practice of conversion therapy. Troy, thank you so much for being with us here this hour, my friend.
Great to be here.
As you can all tell, this is one heck of a panel that we've gathered here today to talk a little bit about diversity, equity, and inclusion in Utah and in our workplaces. I'm super excited about this segment and, being able to share this conversation with these three wonderful community and business leaders and share, you know, this conversation with the community at large. As I was explaining to my guest, this is an important topic to me. It's an important topic for maybe a few reasons that much of the public isn't necessarily aware of. And I realize sometimes people might look at this type of a conversation and say, well, what is the middle-aged white guy doing, you know, producing a session around DE&I, right? I think there's a few things to understand. First of all, my team is very diverse, and I love that about my team. We have a lot of team members from different ethnical backgrounds, or ethnic backgrounds, I should say, and different orientation backgrounds and different nationalities. And, it's for me, it's a really great place and environment to be. There are people that I love, that I appreciate, that I really enjoy working with on a daily basis. And they matter to me. And creating a culture that fosters DE&I and makes them comfortable in the workplace is super important to me. Beyond that, on a personal level, my three biological boys are Mexican American. Their mom is Mexican. And my wife is Costa Rican. My stepchildren are Costa Rican American. And I've sadly, you know, witnessed my own family, my own children, even my boys who are born in the United States, I've witnessed them suffer racism and persecution because of, you know, their ethnic backgrounds. And honestly, as a dad, of course, that's a very difficult thing to witness. And I value this conversation, you know, very, very deeply. So now that I've prefaced that, Nikki, why don't we start with you? And I just like to, I know we went over bios for each of you, but maybe let's get to know you a little bit better on a personal level. Help us understand, you know, where Nikki Walker grew up, in who you were as a child and in your youth, and how it is that your journey's brought you to where you're at now.
Sure, sure. So I grew up in Jersey City, New Jersey, the most diverse city in the country. And now I live in Lehigh. And it was a bit of a challenge getting adjusted to the cultural differences. But where growing up in Jersey City with so many ethnic backgrounds and just people of different orientations and from organizations and from different countries, it was really captivating. My childhood was, I got to learn about so many different cultures, and cultures don't just look at ethnic backgrounds. Cultures look at the culture that you come from, whether that is a country, whether your parents are gay or straight, whether your parents are divorced or together. Like, these are cultures that happen because of your circumstance. And I was really fortunate to grow up in a diversity of cultures. And when I was 14, I decided that I wanted to do for my community. I wanted to live my life for my community. And I started a nonprofit organization called the Intelligent Women of Color. Because what else do you say when you're a Black 14-year-old girl in Jersey City? And we created this organization to make sure that teenagers in our organization, I mean, in our neighborhood, had a place where they can come and they could really talk about who they were and what kind of experiences they were going through with the oversight of capable mentors. So mentorship has really been a part of my life, my entire life. And coming to Utah, that's no different. Being a minority here, or rather being part of the global majority, as I like to say, here in Utah, is a space where you need to have allies. And I've managed to create a space where I have amazing allies, including Mindy and Troy, who really have helped me to carve out a space in this Utah where we can talk about things like DEIB, where we can really talk about what justice looks like for people of color, what equality looks like, and what equity looks like, because, you know, we want equity for everyone, so everyone has what they need. So my background really gave me a foundation for the work that I'm doing today, and I'm really grateful.
So extraordinary, Nikki. I really appreciate you sharing, you know, that story, your story with us. And at 14 years old, to create a nonprofit, you know, focused on women of color, I think that you know, the community probably begins to understand the depth of the individual that sits in front of us, and how it is that you've risen to become a community leader, particularly one that is a champion for DE&I in the workplace here in Utah and in the tech sector, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a bit here. So thank you again for being with us today, Nikki.
Thank you.
Mindy, why don't we go to you? A little background, your story, your journey.
Sure. Well, I love that Nikki lives in Lehigh, because I'm from Lehigh. And I know many of you have heard me joke that my little Lehigh has changed a lot since Footloose. It is not my same Lehigh. There's an Adobe there. So about 2 years ago, we were at Adobe. They were hosting an LGBTQ youth summit where all of the nonprofits had gotten together. 700 young people and their parents were there at Adobe celebrating, learning together. And I literally just stood there and cried, looking over the beautiful view, how gorgeous Utah is. And here we were in my little town that was not that accepting, that inclusive, that aware 20 years before. And yet there we were hosting an LGBTQ youth forum. It was just overwhelming and awesome. I'm a teacher in my soul. That's what I love. I was a drama teacher for many years. I produce large-scale events and shows, and I love to give everyone a chance to really shine on the stage. And that's how I got involved with the work of Equality Utah. Troy and I met years ago. He auditioned for my Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and of course was a star, so we had to be in it. And we just have stayed lifelong friends doing art to help shift community, to help tell a story, to bring people together. And that's what I love. That's what I do. And I feel so grateful to be part of the work of Equality Utah doing exactly that. We want people to come together and recognize each other's humanity. Thanks for letting me be here today.
Isn't it beautiful, Mindy, to see, you know, you and I having grown up here in Utah, you know, being in our middle age. I know you're younger than I, but, you know, it shows in the radiant face. it's beautiful to see, you know, an environment that was not very inclusive, you know, when we grew up as kids, you know, 30 years ago or 35 years ago, to what we are becoming and where the potential is. And it's so beautiful to see the community rally around diversity and protecting each other's civil liberties, right? Our basic innate human rights. It's for me, it's been a very beautiful process to kind of witness that. And I hope that, you know, we continue to see that evolve and emerge and blossom, you know, here in Utah. Yeah. And I appreciate you being a champion of it.
Yeah. Just in the 7 years I've been working with Equality Utah, just in those 7 years, the difference has been miraculous, honestly. Yeah. Thank you.
I agree. Well, and it most definitely is community leaders like the three of you and the conversations that help, you know, to begin to reframe what often is, limited, you know, perspectives, right? Mm-hmm. And when you really begin to think about, you know, these challenging sort of topics and issues from a very humane perspective and step into the shoes of the people on the other side of the equation, right? Mm-hmm. It becomes pretty easy to kind of say, all right, like that old way of thinking, like, isn't the right way of thinking. We need to figure out, you know, the right way to create the right experiences and give equal ground to everybody, you know, that's part of our local equation, right? So Troy, my friend, let's go over to you for a minute. And if you can give us a little bit of background about your journey and your story, and then I'd love for you to kind of tell us all a little bit more about your mission at Equality Utah and what the organization does in the community.
Yeah, thank you so much. Great to be with you. And thanks to everyone who's tuned in to watch right now. So I grew up as a good Mormon boy in Eugene, Oregon. And I'll tell you, in Oregon, had I come out as gay as a teenager, the state would have been very accepting of me. But when I had to come out as a Latter-day Saint in Oregon, that's when people looked at me funny and, you know, that's where I felt ostracized and marginalized. I felt like I was the other, because I was a Latter-day Saint. So that was a challenge for me. But I went on my, LDS mission to England. And when I was there, you know, there was this sort of nascent sort of emerging queer desire that was there. And I struggled deeply with. I was really afraid that if I was gay, that I would be ostracized from my family, my faith community, and the people that mattered most to me. So I moved to Utah, and I thought if I could just become like a turbo Mormon, if I could become the most righteous Latter-day Saint ever, that all of these queer gay desires would go away. And so I ran and joined the thing that was the farthest from. I started volunteering for the Utah Eagle Forum, and which is like the leading anti-LGBT organization in the state. It was back then 30 years ago, and it is still today. Gail Rizika was my mentor. Okay. The first time I ever went to the Capitol was with Gail. She trained me, taught me how to become an effective lobbyist. In the 90s, she was kind of ferocious up there and feared. And that's really, that's when she had me under her wing. And so I learned from the master. But after spending a couple of years with her and doing that kind of work, it was incongruent with who I knew I was in my soul. And eventually I was able to come out, and then I started channeling that energy into LGBT advocacy. I had a talk show on KRCL, as Earl said, for 10 years. And now I've been the director of Equality Utah for the past 7.5 years. And we are the state's LGBTQ advocacy organization. So we work on Capitol Hill in a bipartisan way to ensure that the laws in our state include and protect our community. So, yes. And I really, really, we are committed to really reaching out across the aisle. A lot of people see us as a kind of a liberal organization, but in reality, you know, we work very closely. We're nonpartisan. We work very closely with leadership in the Republican Party as well as the Democrat Party, and trying to figure out how we build bridges from one group to the next. That's what's really essential to our work. We are very concerned about the increasing polarization in our country and the growing sense of contempt that we see when people who don't share our political views are viewed as an existential enemy to democracy and to the country. That happens on both sides. And we've got to figure out how we can see the humanity of each other again. We're losing that as a country, and it does not bode well for our democracy if we cannot disagree in a civil manner, if we cannot see the humanity of people who come from different perspectives, come from different skin colors, and who see the world differently. So we have a big challenge ahead of us, and we hope that the work, that the kind of way that we approach DEI is a way of building bridges from different communities, one community to the other.
Yeah. So fantastic, Troy. First off, you know, as a guy who, one of my personal core values is authenticity. I have to thank you. I have to congratulate you for, you know, finding, even amidst very difficult circumstances of, you know, losing family ties and spiritual community, to be authentic to yourself and be, you know, be able to say, this is who I am. And I'm going to own it, and I'm going to help others, you know, own it and find space there as well. So that's wonderful. It's amazing. And you mentioned something that's so important right now. And that is the polarization that's happening in our country. We've got, you know, the far left and the far right, essentially, that both are saying that if your perspective does not align with me and mine, then there's something fundamentally wrong with you, right? They've forgotten, and that's the cool thing about your organization and you as people at Equality Utah, is you understand diversity applies to diversity of thought as well, that it's okay for us to disagree, right? It's okay. That's healthy. It's constructive. We need to bring those conversations to the table and be mature adults that can sit at a table and respect each other's perspectives and talk through things and figure out how we build these bridges and how we build common ground. Right. So I commend your work, Troy. I commend your work, Mindy, and what you're doing in Utah, you know, to help establish that common ground. It's very amazing. And I'm so glad that you're here to be part of that.
Always.
By the way, Troy, were you part of protesting the Rage Against the Machine concert in Spanish Fork? What was that, 93, 94, something like that?
No, I missed that, sadly. So.
Bummer.
I would go on to become a big fan of Rage Against the Machine. So,
me too. Yeah. Me too. My band might even play a little bit tomorrow night. We'll see.
Nice. Oh yes. So Utah County, Rage Against the Machine in the early 90s. That would have been a real treat.
Yeah. I know that was Gail got on that bandwagon. She was protesting that pretty hard, if I remember. My recollection could be, yeah, right. All right. Well, Nikki, I want to come back around to you for a minute. The reality is you know, in Utah, in business, this conversation of DEI and even the consideration is honestly somewhat new. Like, it's something a topic that's been rising to the top in just recent years. And particularly, you know, you and I are in the tech industry. We know the importance of diversity in our industry. It's cool to begin to see the tech community rise to this conversation and rise to become champions of how we create more diverse places and spaces and, you know, more balanced equations for all of the stakeholders, how we continue to attract, you know, more diverse talent that brings different perspectives to the table, right? So maybe can you talk a little bit about your journey there, what you've observed happen in recent months and years here in Utah, and then maybe go a little bit into why you feel like DEI is important in business.
For sure. When I got here 5 years ago, I wasn't in tech. I was in just sort of consumer marketing. So I came here as the director of global brand awareness for a multi-billion dollar brand. And that brand sold to everybody, millions and millions of people. But the people who were selling that product, it was very homogenous. And it was important to me that we kind of show some love to the people who were in the minority of that group of that population of people who were selling the product. And eventually, you know, those things happen and things happen. But it took a long time. It took a long time. And for me, I needed to see movement in the DE&I space, because when I got here 5 years ago, diversity and inclusion was the buzzword. And I didn't really understand why. I'm like, I'm in this space. I understand the space to be homogenous. I understand the space to be working very well. I wonder why this DE&I is so important. And I later learned it was because there were major corporations coming here who wanted the space and wanted the experience of Utah, but refused to bring their teams here because there was no diversity. And so we were, in all essence, losing money as a state because we couldn't provide a more diverse space for people to come and build and learn and grow. And so in that 5 years, I've found now, especially in the tech industry where I've been for the past 3 years, we recognize how important it is. As you said earlier, it's one of my key phrases, diversity of thought. We recognize in the tech industry, and I think in Utah's business industry as a whole, how important it is to have perspectives from other spaces. When everybody grows up together and socializes together and communes together, we kind of work ourselves into an echo chamber where you have an idea and I think it's a great idea. So the next person thinks it's a great idea and everybody thinks it's a great idea because we're all coming from the same place. But when you insert brown person here or insert gay person here or insert handicapped person here or insert veteran person here, what you begin to see are the holes in this wonderful idea you have because everyone is not being served. So I've watched the business community and the tech community more specifically say, we have to really understand A, who we're serving, right? And B, who we are bringing into our organizations and what kind of community and culture are we building in these organizations? And more times than not, it is realized very quickly that diversity is going to improve the bottom line. The data shows it. The data says that organizations that are more diverse make more money. And that's just the bottom line. If you can't be in it for the human part, be in it for the money part. I don't care which part you're in it for. Be in it because it makes sense. It makes sense on a human level. It makes sense on a monetary level. It makes sense in a growth perspective. So I'm really grateful to have been able to observe what is happening. I see this as, you know, we've got another 10 years in front of us at least to get to point A. We got 10 years to get to point A where we're trying to be, where there's some kind of equity that we can see. But what we can see now are people working really hard to figure out what equity looks like and what equity means. Because for so long as a country, equity has not been a priority. Equity is not, you know, this, it has been about the haves and the have nots. And equity is not a part of the haves and the have not conversation. But in tech, where you can be successful, a successful entrepreneur without a college degree, without any formal training, with some real grit and some real interest in learning something. This is an industry that we owe to America, that we owe to underserved populations. We owe this to people who have been on the fringe of society because of the color of the skin or the educational background they grew up in. We owe this. And so I'm grateful to be a champion for that kind of equity and really kind of opening doors and opening eyes to what we have to offer here. And Utah stepping up to the plate.
Isn't that just fantastic and super cool to see how we're seeing so many community and business leaders that are stepping out from the shadows and saying, this is right. You know, it's right. And we need to get behind it and we're going to help in the process. You know, Nikki, maybe a quick follow-up question. Why, you know, we've seen these stats, we've seen these studies of more diverse organizations perform better. They mm-hmm. thrive better, right? They create more revenue and they create more profit, right? Why do you think that is? What's behind that?
Oh, for sure. It's about diversity of thought. For sure. It is about having a lens on something that once was very vanilla and straightforward. Even when we look at just world things, SATs, the SATs are built for a certain group of people to pass or to score highly on because the language in an inner city is different than the language in a suburb. The way children are able to absorb information is different when they're hungry than it is when they go to school on a full stomach. And so you have to look at these disparities that are happening, right? And you have to say, how do we solve the disparity? And that's why, I mean, DEI is so important because you're able to look at those things that you never would have thought of otherwise when you have diversity at the table. Diversity at the table opens eyes and opens doors.
Yeah, 100%. I don't have the same perspective, you know, that you have on life and business, nor do I have the same perspective that Troy has, right? We grew up in different environments. We grew up in different communities, different, you know, different families and, you know, bringing all of that to the equation to solve problems in business and to innovate, like it's a winning equation. There is no question whatsoever about it. You know, by the way, we ton of great comments and questions, you know, coming in. Thank you, everybody, for, you know, being here today, being part of the conversation, contributing. We'll come around back around to some of these questions in a bit. Nikki, the other thing that I think has been really cool and just a comment, and I, you know, come back around to Mindy here in a minute. But I think it's been really amazing the last several years to see women in tech really become an idea and so many champions behind that at the moment. I can tell you as a 24-year entrepreneur in Utah, in our space, women have always been lacking to a significant extent. On our side, on IT engineers and cybersecurity engineers, out of 500 applications, there might be one woman, right, that applies. And that's still very much our equation today, right? Which doesn't create the right winning environments for us at the moment. And so, the fact that we have the Women's Tech Council, She Tech, Tech Moms that Trina, you know, and her team are all a part of, you know, and She Tech, I love the fact that we're reaching into, you know, middle school and high school, and telling these girls and these women that, hey, you have a really good opportunity in tech and it's cool and tech needs you. Like, we need you here to help us evolve and innovate and become better, you know? So that's been, I think, a really cool, you know, movement. And I'm so glad that we have so many people that care enough to do something about it here in Utah.
I just want to point out that She Tech Explorer Day had nearly 2,000 girls from middle school to high school who were learning about the tech industry and jobs in tech and work in tech. And as you know, and I'm so proud of Domo because we had a dozen women who served as mentors at SheTech. And then we did some presentations. So yeah, it's important. And in organizations like Women Tech Council, just priceless.
Yeah, totally. Obviously I'm a little biased on the tech community, right? But you know, for the ladies out there who are maybe considering a career or considering changes in career, oftentimes I think the perspective is you've got to be a software developer, or you've got to be in DevOps, or you've got to be an IT engineer or cybersecurity engineer. But the reality is tech needs people across all sorts of departments. We need women in HR. We need women in leadership. We need women on boards. We need women in finance. We need women in marketing and sales, you know, and not just women. We need people of color, of ethnic backgrounds. We need people of, you know, different orientation, right? We need gay men, and we need, you know, lesbian women, and we need trans, you know, people in tech to, you know, bring better conversations to the table and help us, you know, advance and evolve. I appreciate all the perspectives, you know, here, Mindy, so much, you know, I'm very grateful for your contributions here. Mindy, let's, you know, go to you real quick. Tell us a little bit about, for you, why DE&I is important in the community and in business, and what a healthy sort of balance looks like, in your opinion.
Well, and I love that you just said tech is in every business, and every company needs every kind of person. I didn't realize that I was such a salesperson because I've been in the classroom for so many years, but I'm all, oh, I could sell a ketchup popsicle to a woman in white gloves, no problem. But what I realized going out and meeting with all the different tech companies to sell our Business Equality Leader Program was I was selling something I'm selling what you need. And what you need is a perspective shift that might not have been there. The first time I showed up at an event in Silicon Slopes area, it was a breakfast. I was one of three women and probably 80 men. And I was like, oh, excellent. Hey, where's your coffee maker? And they were like, oh, we didn't think about coffee. Sorry. And I thought, just that perspective shift, that a coffee maker, and I remember talking with a woman at Adobe. She's like, oh, I could only last at Utah 1 year. I couldn't get coffee anywhere. And that seems like such a simple thing, but that was enough for her to be like, it's too weird. I couldn't fit there. And it was just a cup of coffee. But it's that kind of thing when we start realizing the different ways people think of things and look at things, it can open us up. And I think, as you know, white bread from Utah, I never realized a lot of things until I got deep into this work. Yesterday, we went and did a training in Price, Utah at USU Eastern. And one of the professors thanked me for doing a training in a way that didn't make him feel so ashamed for being a white straight guy. And I said, that's our goal. We don't want to shame you. We want to help you. We want to come together with you and teach you what an ally is. You're already being an ally in most ways. But he said, so many DEI trainings, so much DEI writing and articles are shaming everyone. And that's when people are like, actually, I'm tapping out. I don't want to be part of this because I feel crappy. So how can we talk about DEI in a way that makes people excited about it and want to come together and want to show up no matter how we identify and be an ally? And that's what we're all about. And Nikki and Troy and I constantly talk about how do we bring people together and not actually have them completely shut down and tap out.
Yeah. Interesting that oftentimes, you know, conversations about inclusivity aren't very inclusive, right?
right.
You never accomplish, and I can tell you in business, you never accomplish anything by ostracizing any stakeholders in the equation, right? You have to consider everybody's perspective, everybody's background. You have to consider how you create the right outcomes for everybody that's part of that equation. And that means, yeah, the middle-aged white male who grew up in Utah, who, you know, had a very different experience. And that's part of the thing. We have to realize some of this is just, it's community, it's societal, it's based upon the, you know, where we grew up and the families we grew up in. And it's not that there's something fundamentally wrong with some of us, right? Now, if there is, you know, if people are straight up, you know, biased, bigoted, right, have prejudice, okay, maybe that's not okay in my opinion, right? However, if it's a matter of a misunderstanding because they simply have never had a different perspective shared with them, they've never had their mind stretched a little bit, right? That's part of the equation here is to find, as you guys have expressed here, find the common ground and then build on that common ground, right? And it doesn't matter if in the end we don't all agree exactly. Let's just figure out how we create a meaningful, friendly, welcoming, belonging environment for all of us, right? Mm-hmm. Troy, let's come around to you a little bit and tell us maybe a little bit about what you've learned about how community and business leaders can really help to champion these ideas, these conversations, and what you think that, you know, business and community leaders in Utah should be doing at the moment to help usher us into a newer, better era.
Yeah, I think that you know, the relationships are at the true core of DEI work. We have to be able to build friendships, and love has to be centered and the focus of it all. So I've been impressed with the loving way in which many Silicon Slopes companies have really vocally, publicly stepped forward to embrace our community, to stand with us in good times as well as bad times, to celebrate with us. I'm seeing more tech companies show up to Utah Pride Festival events. I'm seeing companies working and collaborating with Equality Utah, joining our Business Equality Network, having us come in and troubleshoot problems. There's been a genuine desire for outreach, and the core of it. I know DEI. I know especially as employees. When you're told that there's going to be a DEI seminar that you have to sit through, I know everyone starts to shut off. No one wants to be preached to for an hour, and so that's never anything that we want to do. Okay, I don't want to preach to you, though I was a good missionary. I'm not going to be preaching to you, but truly, actually having partnerships and relationships and friendships is truly the key to how we work through all of these things. And not being afraid to have difficult conversations about issues, especially when, you know, if you go onto social media and you go on to partisan 24-hour news channels, you would think that America, we just all hate each other, that we all have contempt for each other, because these platforms are designed to generate outrage. And so being able to sort of, as a company, sort of be the adults in the room, be as a tech leader, stepping forward and saying, no, we're not going to engage in the culture war. We're actually going to bring people together for peace talks, and we're going to work on focusing on how we build these relationships, that how we can take care of each other during really difficult challenges. We've needed that more than ever during the pandemic, where so many of us have been isolated and separated from each other. And now we're trying to find our way back to each other. And it seems like we're just all with everything. So I have been impressed with the tech industry. When I'm up on Capitol Hill and I'm dealing with difficult legislation, the Utah tech sector with Silicon Slopes, they're there with us. And they're there reaching out to lawmakers and to the governor and saying, hey, let's embrace policies and legislation and laws that actually include and protect everyone. And so I'm optimistic for our future, even though we're going through a really difficult time as a country right now.
Yeah. Again, just these points of, you know, the fact that we really are all just human, you know, and we have to consider each other's need to belong, need to be loved, need to be part of community and tribe, and to not be outcasts, right? And, you know, in the end, like, for me, kindness is cool, right? You know, kindness is cool. A local musician that I've lost touch with, and I need to try to, you know, reestablish some contact there. But a guy who was a bit of a mentor to me in my younger years, Douglas Spotted Eagle, he used to always say, look, we're all just five-fingered humans, right? It doesn't matter what color, you know, those fingers are. It doesn't matter which way they swing, right? It really doesn't. You know, we are all human beings. We're all part of this together. We're all part of the same village. And, you know, creating the right community with each other where we can all thrive. And we all have equal rights, like, and we all have equal opportunity. It's so, so important.
I remember I had this moment where it was a few years ago, and we were having a big debate in the country about whether we should allow Syrian refugees to enter the country. And there was this big debate. And I was in New York City. I was kind of wandering around Brooklyn, and I saw some graffiti that really hit me hard. And the graffiti said simply, I will look for myself in the eyes of those who do not look like me. I had to stop for a second and just take that in. I will look for myself in the eyes of those people who do not look like me. And that is truly a challenge. I also think we have to look for ourselves in the eyes of people who don't think like me. And actually see yourself reflected back, recognizing this, the connections that we all have as human beings to each other, and how important it is and how much we need each other. You know, Republicans need Democrats and Democrats need Republicans. I know we don't want to believe that right now in this moment in our country, but we actually aren't whole unless we actually do include and accept these other facets, the facet, what somebody who is different from me brings to me. The gift is they help me to become more whole because they have perspectives and views and experiences that I've not had. And that's what happens when we bring these diverse elements into companies, into leadership, from management to the C-suite. We've got to have people fill in those experiences, people who have a perspective that is different. As Nikki was saying earlier, we need each other. We need each other desperately. And now I think more than ever.
Yeah. So a big piece to this, in my opinion, and it's another topic and conversation that we see evolving, you know, at rapid pace in front of us, particularly in the business community, is emotional intelligence. You know, this is a big part of the equation of when we sit at the table, whether it's proverbial or literal, right, with different stakeholders of diverse perspectives and backgrounds and experiences, having the emotional intelligence to love and appreciate those human beings across the table from us, to understand their perspectives, to understand, you know, where they're coming from and who they are, and to see them, you know, at their core, at the heart and soul of those individuals, and to say, you know what, like I understand where they're coming from, and they've helped me expand, right? They've helped me have a different perspective and improve, right? I think that's a beautiful process. So a couple of questions I think that we should probably get around to here. Nikki, this is a good question. Let's go to Mindy real quick on this question. Dallin Farnsworth on LinkedIn says, what are some of the bridges you have built between groups? This is toward, you know, directed towards Equality Utah.
Yeah, I think it's been really interesting with my colleague, Olivia. She is one of the wisest, classiest gals I know. She's transgender. She was one of the first to transition in the Obama administration when she was active duty Air Force. And today is Trans Day of Visibility. So, hey, everyone, I just wanted to make sure everyone knew that. But what's amazing is there's a lot of bias toward trans people and why we have Trans Day of Visibility. And yet you watch someone meet Olivia, talk to her for 5 minutes, find out she's an American hero that served 3 tours in Iraq, and their heads pop off, spin around and sit back down. And you watch them in real time question everything they thought about bathroom access, everything they thought, because they start to just think she's the neatest gal ever. And that's what I love. That's the magic that I see happen in real time. And I think as soon as, I think back to when I was teaching and I had a class full of 27 Saudi Arabian men. And they had never had a female teacher either. So I come in and I'm shaking hands with all of them, totally ignorant that culturally I shouldn't be touching them. But by the end of that class, my heart had busted wide open and we just adored each other. And that's the thing, is I did make mistakes. I didn't know better. You know, we do have biases that we don't know. And I think that's, like you said, when we're sitting across the table from someone, not only opening our hearts to them, to listening to them, to understanding them, but also noticing if inside we're feeling a little triggered by them, if something's getting us riled, questioning what is that in me that's being triggered, because they're our mirror, right? So how do we question, wait, why am I feeling like this, and really dig into ourselves and find out what that trigger is? And I think that's when bridge building happens, when we question ourselves and when we are open to someone else's experience.
Yeah. Really beautiful way to state it. Thank you so much, Mindy. So, Nikki, I think this question would be a great one for you, and I kind of have a follow-up question to it. Lee Bernard on LinkedIn asks, what are some recruiting strategies for diversity that can be implemented?
Oh, that's a great question. I'll say at Domo, we have implemented quite a few strategies. One is kind of a secondary strategy that looks at working with all of the diverse organizations in your community. So we are working to secure all of our memberships with the LGBTQ chamber, the Black chamber, the Asian chamber, the Hispanic chamber, so that we have a resource to look for all of this talent, because those organizations have the resources that we're looking for. The talent exists there. They don't know that the opportunity exists over here. So it's about how to build bridge, right? How do you build the bridge between the talent and the opportunity? So we found that working with diverse organizations is incredibly helpful. Also, being intentional. Being intentional changed our hiring practices at Domo. At the end of 2020, we signed the parity pledge for people of color. And that said that if you had an open position, vice president or above, you would ensure that a person of color was on the interviewing panel. Well, we had already signed the women's parity pledge, which said the same for women. And what we decided to do was make it a policy. So now our policy at Domo is that for any open slot, there has to be a woman and a person from an underserved background on that slate in order for the interview to take place. And in doing that, at the end of our first quarter in doing it, over 35% of our new hires were diverse, either women or people from diverse backgrounds. So being intentional is key. And then linking up with the people who already have those resources is the turn of the key.
Yeah. Fantastic advice. Thank you so much, Nikki. Maybe we don't have long, but just a quick follow-up question to that. what's the difference between having DEI policy and having DEI ingrained in your culture? And why does that matter?
Oh, having policy just means there are some words written down somewhere that maybe people follow and maybe they don't. But having it in the culture means that the people who are a part of your organization feel belonging. They understand the emotion of belonging because it is something that they feel when they go to work every day. They know that they are respected. They know that their ideas are used as contributions to the work product that is being produced. They know that if they have a question, it will be answered. Belonging is not a policy. It is not a strategy. It is a culture. And that's the difference.
Yeah. Yeah, so great. You know, I know a couple of things that, and look, as an organization, we're evolving, you know, as our equation evolves and we bring more and more diverse people, you know, into our equation, we're evolving, you know. So some of the things that I'm really happy with, which, by the way, you know, we recently promoted Crystal Davis, who is, she's Peruvian American. She's a female. We promoted her into our director of DEI position in our organization so that we bring a diverse voice, a diverse perspective to the table. You know, some of the cool things that she's doing, for example, is making sure that we celebrate all holidays that are important to our team members, right? We have team members from other countries and holidays we weren't aware of. You know, right. We have team members who are gay, who are not heterosexual, who have different orientation. And there are, you know, there are celebrations that are important to them. So we're making sure that we celebrate those things as a team. She's putting together like a cultural celebration night where we're all going to kind of bring dishes from, you know, our backgrounds or our culture. I'm Irish American, so I'm going to bring, you know, maybe some corned beef or, yeah, right. you know, anyways, yeah, that's, you know, some of the small things that we're doing to make sure that the culture begins to shift and that belonging and diversity is welcome. It's important. And that everybody feels like, you know, they have an equal place. You know, we only have a couple more minutes here. Maybe we just, you know, do a quick roundtable start here with Troy. Just some quick parting thoughts. You know, what do you want to leave with the community before we wrap up today?
Yeah, just find those moments to connect with people and to build friendships and relationships, not being afraid to show up to a Juneteenth celebration. And celebrate with your Black friends and maybe make some new ones. Not being afraid to show up to a Pride Festival, even if you're straight. You know, we want everyone to feel welcome and everyone to know that they belong. So don't shut down from each other, especially when conflict is ensuing. Find ways to step back, to breathe, and to see the humanity of the person that you're disagreeing with. And if we could all commit to spending less time on social media, less time on the news getting outraged, and more time making genuine connections with people, I think we're going to save our little country of ours. So, but let's just start with our own neighborhoods and our own companies first and see how we go. And then we'll build out from there.
Fantastic parting thoughts. Thank you, Troy. Mindy, how about you?
Do you see how lucky I am that I get to work with them every day? You know, I'm going to be really bold and direct and say, if you have questions, we're here. Email me, mindy@equalityutah.org. We have a business equality leader certification. We come in and do trainings. We get creative with you and come up with exciting lunch and learn offerings that we can do together. And we can help you create that culture calendar of things maybe you hadn't thought of. And we want an authentic partnership with the companies here in Utah. And we want to help you make a more inclusive culture.
So cool. We're so glad that you're here to help us do that. You know, thank you for your service and what you're doing for the community, Mindy and Troy. Nikki, how about you? Some parting thoughts.
I think my parting thought is that I'd like for the community to personalize the I in DEI, right? The I is inclusion, and inclusion really starts with relationships and making sure that the people around you feel included and feel like they have the space to offer their opinion, to be included. So personalize the I and DE&I and do something today, tomorrow, and the next day to further inclusion in your organization, in your community, wherever you exist.
Great. Really, really great, Nikki. You know, I think when you think that I is more about you, you know, than anything else and what you can do, that changes the whole perspective and probably your behaviors and your actions and your mindset around it. Right. So, thank you. Really, really great advice. So, as we wrap up, just want to, you know, again, thank my esteemed guests for sharing, their abundance, for sharing their light, for sharing their beauty and for being champions in the community and in business, for helping us create a better, brighter future that is more inclusive, you know, and where there's more opportunity and equity for everybody across the board. Thank you to you three. Thank you to our audience for joining us today. You know, very appreciative of this hour. I know it's been enriching for me, and I hope it has for everybody else. So we're going to sign off. It's 1 o'clock. We'll see you all soon. Join me on April 12th at noon with Scott Paul.